This is the Ed Milet Show.
Welcome back to Max Out, everybody. Today is, it's a real honor for me. I have a friend, but one of my true heroes in my life sitting to my side.
It's here. A real honor for me, Ed. Hey, thanks for letting me be a part of this.
Thank you, John, so much. This is one of the few interviews I've even been a little bit nervous for. So.
Oh, hey, listen, you're just dealing with an old man here.
An old man.
We're just going to talk about life and enjoy ourselves.
This old man has sold 30 million books in his life, plus.
Well, it's because I'm old.
Give enough time.
You can't sell 30 million if you're a young man.
You can't do it quickly.
You understand? You've got to be old to do those things.
You also can't sell 30 million books unless they're great. And so he sold 30 million books, everybody. This is somebody who's trained leaders on every country in the world. Yeah. He's won numerous awards. He is known as the expert on leadership in the business world. There's multiple publications that have named him as such. And he's got a new book coming out called Leadershift that we're going to talk about today as well. But I just cannot tell you what a thrill it is for me to have you here today, John. So thank you.
Thank you. Ed, it's my honor. Thank you. And it's what a great joy for us to talk and enjoy each other and talk about leadership and all the stuff that we love and adding value to people and have so many people join us. And our goal, obviously, is to add value to you. So hang with us and hopefully we'll give you some good nuggets and principles that can really help you be a better person and a better leader and add value to others.
No question, we're going to do that. Do you mind, because I've followed you, people ask me all the time, obviously in my space, you know, what books to read. And I could tell you, I have people, I recommend first their scriptures. Second book I always recommend everybody is Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. Think and Grow Rich. And then I say anything by John Maxwell. And that's honestly my answer. If you go to any of my social media posts, it's just, that's a
fact. I'm not worthy.
It's just it's an absolute fact. Is it 80, so many books?
I don't know. It's a bunch of them. I mean, but again, you can't write that many books unless you're old.
Unless you're old.
You understand. It's tied in with old.
But there's this thing with publishers where they don't want you to keep writing them unless they sell them.
Yeah,
they
really
want
good. You to sell them.
So you're pretty good at that. So, but I always recommend you.
Thank you.
And your books have shaped my philosophies about leadership. They validated things I hoped were true about being a leader, and I've just learned so much from you. So I know everybody's going to do that today, but I want to know a little about you because I don't know the whole background. So obviously you were a pastor of a church prior to getting into this space, Skyline Church, San Diego, California.
I was a pastor for 25 years.
Everybody, the 25 years pastor. This particular church we're talking, by the way, before the interview, three pastors in
70 years.
Is that not incredible?
Yeah, great church. And I was the second one. I followed the founding pastor and loved it because I love to help people.
Yeah.
But I was with my publisher at a meeting and they said something that just changed my life. They said, John, we've been looking at the people who buy your books. Mm-hmm. And 2/3 of your books are bought by the business community. Mm-hmm. And I was totally shocked, Ed. I honestly had no clue. Because I was really, as a pastor, kind of writing more to the church community and the religious community. And I said, you're kidding me. They said, no. They said, you've become very popular in the business community because your leadership principles cross right over. And so the business people are going in there and they're grabbing your books to get the principles out so they can lead better. Mm. And literally, but now I'm a person of faith.
Yes.
So at that moment, Ed, I really felt God just say to me, and this is where you're going to spend the rest of your life, in the business community. Mm. And so I made, literally that day, made preparations to resigned my congregation. We were in a major building program, so it took me a couple years to do it correctly and make sure that that they would have success after I left. But literally, that was the day that kind of changed me and had me. I went over to this entirely new area.
That's interesting. So it's a calling on your heart, right?
Definitely.
And there are people that are listening to this because I get messages from them all the time that are in something similar, meaning they're in a career that maybe was their first dream.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like this was their dream. They thought this is what they wanted to do. They've gone down the road to a certain extent, but they're feeling this tug on their heart to maybe chase their passion or their mission. What would you say to those people? That had to be a difficult decision. You had all these people relying on you.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, first of all, if you're very successful, whatever you leave, you're leaving something that's very successful. And what I found a long time ago, it's very easy to leave something that's bad. It's kind of like, get out of town,
you know
what I mean?
Right, right.
Where's the exit?
Right.
But when it comes to something successful, you know, people say, wow, I've got to give this up. I mean, this is really good for me. This is really working. In fact, I tell people all the time, they need to do an autopsy on success. Because the greatest detriment of tomorrow's success is today's success. Because the tendency is for me when I'm successful, Ed, to hold on to it and say, okay, let's not change anything. We've got the formula. We got it down. We're making some good money. We're helping some people. So let's kind of box it and kind of set it apart and let's keep it just as it is. And of course, that's a disaster. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, Leader Shifts, is because I wanted to help people understand that there's no such thing as leading people the same way forever. That you have to keep learning and growing and shifting and making those shifts in your life. Mm. But for me, when I made this transition into the business world, what I discovered was, as you were talking a moment ago, you feel the tug on your heart, the kind of like, wow, I started here and now I'm over here. Here's what I believe. I believe that as you follow your dream, it gets bigger. Mm. And when it gets bigger, there are more things that you're learning about it that you didn't know when you started. In the beginning, the dream is just, it's just very little, and you can kind of see it. So you go that way, but then it begins to expand.
Yes.
And for me, it's a calling. And let me just say this. Yeah. I'm not trying to be over-spiritual, but somebody asked me the other day what a calling was, and I like kind of my new definition for calling.
Okay.
In fact, in my book, Leader Shifts, one of my chapters is shifting from career to calling, and how do I make that shift? But I think a calling is a purpose with a divine touch.
Oh, that's wonderful! I love that.
Isn't that good? That sounds terrible, but it is good.
I'm stealing it.
But it's you've got this purpose, but there's a difference thing, and that there's a higher touch. I was doing an interview in our John Maxwell company. We have a simulcast called L2L that goes out to hundreds of sites, and Tyler Perry and I were doing an interview together, and he wrote a book, and I love the title of his book, and that is Higher Is Waiting.
I love that.
And I love that. And I think that a calling is you've got this purpose, but all of a sudden higher is waiting. There's a divine touch on it until all of a sudden you say, okay, this is more than just my purpose. Mm. This is our purpose. Our purpose, God's purpose, and my purpose
that's
together.
Beautiful.
And you want to talk about a partnership. That's a good partnership.
That's the ultimate partnership.
That's the ultimate partnership.
Oh, really, I love that. Yeah. See, I'm done. That's what I needed to do. Did you grow up? I'm just curious. We're going to navigate in and out of different topics. Did you grow up in your faith? Was that something you were raised with in your household?
Yeah. My father was a pastor.
Your dad was a pastor.
So, I grew up in a beautiful home. In fact, my father's still alive. He'll be in a couple of days. He'll be 97.
That's incredible.
And
that bodes well for you, by the way.
Yeah, it really does. It bodes really well for me. But I was very fortunate. When it comes to parents, I won the lottery. I just, many people, we don't choose our parents.
Right.
But my parents, my mother unconditionally loved me, and my father had this, and still has this incredible drive and entrepreneurship and this kind of largeness about him that constantly expands his world. So as his world was expanding, we were growing up in it, and my world expanded. Yeah. And so I grew up in a leadership culture.
Sure.
I didn't even know what it was as a kid.
It was your environment.
Yeah. It's what it is.
And as we shift a little bit, it is interesting to me because I have people all the time telling me that there's these things that hold them back from chasing that calling that you've described. And I think one of them is, maybe I'm wrong about that, but you grew up in the church, your dad was a pastor, you become one. I'm sure the family was very proud of that, right?
Yeah.
You'd achieved so much.
Yeah.
I imagine that adds to the difficulty that your family was so proud of something you had already been accomplishing. I find people all the time say that one of the things that holds them back is, well, my family doesn't support what I'm about to go do. Yeah, do you see that too?
All the time, and I'm glad you brought it up. I wrote a book, maybe 8-10 years ago, called Put Your Dream to the Test.
Okay.
And it's just a good, solid book. And in it, the thesis of that book was that the more valid reasons you have to accomplish a dream, the higher the odds are that you will.
Oh, wow.
Now, that's a powerful thesis.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's no cotton candy here. There's no hype stuff here.
Yes.
And so I basically looked at what are the valid reasons to achieve a dream, and there were 10 of them.
Okay.
And so I formed it in a way of questions. But the first one, the first question is your dream really your dream? And that's where we started. Because can I tell you something? If your dream isn't really your dream, ain't going to work. Mm-hmm. If it, and I tell people in the book, hey, the first dream we have isn't our dream. Yes. It's our parents' dream.
So
my mom and dad, when I was seven, they thought I was going to be a musician. And so I'm taking piano lessons from the 7 years old to about 13. I wasn't any good in
piano. It wasn't your gift in this.
It wasn't my gift. But they're so proud. They go to my recitals and clap. You see, I'm living their dream. I'm playing the piano. I can't play the piano. I'm not very good at it. I'm not gifted. But it doesn't matter. I'm living their dream. Yep. So what I tell people all the time is we start off our life living someone else's dream, probably our parents. So what happens is a lot of people as adults, they never switch.
So true.
And so they're still living someone else's dream. And again, it's, you know, it's it, like a biblical analogy. It's King, or David before he was king, putting on King Saul's armor.
Yes.
It's not fitting, and he's staggering around there. Well, I know a lot of people, they're putting on someone else's armor, and they just aren't going to achieve because it's not who they are. It's not their dream.
Yeah, that's, by the way, everybody listening, just go back about 1.5 minutes and listen to that again, please, because that is so absolutely golden true. So that was a difficult decision for you, I assume.
It was a difficult decision for me because all I ever knew was pastoring. So let's start there.
Yeah.
It wasn't a difficult decision for me as far as knowing where I was going to go.
Yep.
So I think a lot of times we have clarity on where we should go, but there's a lot of emotion that holds us back.
Sure.
And what was holding me back was the fact that this is what I've known, this is what I studied for, this is what my degrees are, I'm a theologian. And so when I made that transition, Ed, I had three very uphill, challenging, difficult years because I had to take the principles I taught and I had to address them entirely different.
Sure.
I mean, hey, I can't go in the business community and say, now let's turn in our Bibles.
Right.
You know, and by the way, the worship team, if they'll come on right now, do we have the choir? I don't have any of that stuff.
Sure.
So now I've got to take, now here's what's beautiful. The leadership principles that I teach and write in books, they all have a biblical foundation.
Yes.
But I tell anybody, I said, in case that bothers you, you tell me what your leadership principles are, and I'll tell you where the scripture is.
Because
the greatest leadership book ever written was the Bible. And in fact, I have my most wonderful favorite projects was that they asked me to take the Bible and put my leadership lessons in it. It's the Maxwell Leadership Bible.
Saw that.
I'm telling you, Ed. Yep. I have probably 800 lessons in that now.
Yes.
And so you just read a little scripture, and here's another lesson that you can apply into your life. But the reason I can do that is because all the leadership principles I teach, they're all biblically based and have a foundation for it. So now I'm going to a new crowd. So the principles, I got those. Yeah. But now I have to illustrate them different, and I have very little business experience. So what I did, and hopefully this will be helpful to you. Whenever you're making a transition that's kind of out of your strength zone, or certainly brand new like this was, I ask a lot of questions and I listened. And so I just sit down with people like you that are highly successful in business, and I say, okay, let me ask you some questions. And I'd go and I'd ask you questions. I'd learn from you, and I'd take a lot of notes, and I'd pull away and say, okay, now this is how Ed did it, and this is what Ed thinks, and I think I could apply this there. And I spent 3 years humbling myself and being very teachable and saying, I just want to learn. I just want to learn. Because I knew that I had the leadership principles. But principles that are good without application or connection are principles that aren't going to work for anybody. So as a communicator, I know that, you know, so a lot of people, they say, well, I've got this great idea. Doesn't matter if you can't communicate the great idea, it isn't going to go anywhere. So I knew that now I had to connect, I had to communicate. And so I'm asking a lot of questions, and it took me about 3 years to get my rhythm, but I got it.
Yeah, obviously.
And today, you know, today I love the secular business world because it gives me a chance to add value to them. It gives me a chance at times to be salt and light in their lives. And yeah, it's a really good thing.
Amazing. Who thinks a guy leaving that church ends up becoming the most prolific, successful business leadership author of all time?
It makes no sense.
It's pretty incredible. I think what you said is really true, though, because I think, first off, that dream starts a certain size and grows. The other thing, I talked about this with yesterday somebody. I think you'll agree with me on this. Also, the path to getting there will reveal itself as you go. I think oftentimes people think, I have to know every single step in order to get to this ultimate vision.
Come on.
And it doesn't work that way, right? You have to get it revealed to you.
It only works that way in a book.
Yeah, right.
Because what I tell you, see, here, what's this? I'm responsible, Ed, to move on what I see today. there's a whole bunch of people, they're wanting to hold and not move because they don't see 3 days, 5 days, you know, 2 years out, whatever. And what I'm saying is, it's kind of like the lights of a car. Hmm. If I go to the parking lot at night, turn on the lights and say, oh my gosh, I can't go anywhere. I don't see my house. Well, no. Get in the car and start moving in the direction you're supposed to move it. And guess what? You only get about 300 feet of light.
Right.
You don't get you don't get 7 miles of light.
Good.
You don't get to see your house. You got to utilize the light you got so that you can get to where you want to go. And so many people, they're uncomfortable with that light.
Yes.
Because it's not long enough. And what's around the corner? And the whole issue is you don't know what's around the corner until you go around the corner.
Oh gosh, that's so good.
And so you just so you have to be very comfortable, which I am. You have to be very comfortable with traveling, not having all the answers.
So true.
But can I tell you something? The only way you get all the answers is to go all the way through.
Absolutely.
You don't get all the answers on this side.
Oh,
and so if I've got to have it lined up and straight and right and I feel comfortable with it, then I'll never be the leader. And I really believe this, Ed. I believe a lot of leaders fall short because they're unwilling to take what they know now and act on it. And so, therefore, they never get to know what they could know.
Oh, my gosh.
I believe that.
That is an absolute fact.
Yeah.
That is the number one thing when I'm coaching people is their unwillingness to act now on what they know so that what they could know would be revealed to them.
Absolutely.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. You're blowing my mind. So I would be, people will be so upset with me. If I have the expert in the world on leadership in front of me, we don't talk a little bit about that exact specific topic on leadership.
So I've talked on it one other time, so let's
is
give
that
it,
right? Oh, wow.
Let's give it a shot and see if I can.
You'll be okay.
Let's see if I can do it the second time.
You'll be okay.
You may have to encourage me a little bit
I'll
here,
pull
but
you
we'll
along.
See what we can do. Yeah, absolutely. Lift me up a little bit.
I'll do what I can, brother. So I think the beginning place is, I think most people don't see themselves as a leader. Just that in and of itself, I think most people don't see themselves that way, that it's some mystical role in life. What would you say to somebody who says, I just don't know that I am a leader or could be a leader?
Well, everybody's a leader because leadership is influence. That's what it is. And that definition of leadership has served me so well for so many years.
Yeah.
It's in fact, in my book, The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, there's the
great
law.
Great book.
You know, leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. So when somebody says they're not a leader, I say, well, let me ask you a question. Do you influence anybody? And almost always, I've had a couple maybe,
right.
I'm not sure, but almost always I'll say, well, yeah, I mean, you have children, okay, you got your family, so yes, now it may be a little influence, it may be 8-10 people, it may not be, but I look at them and say, okay, if you influence 8 or 10 people, you are a leader. See, what people think is they've got to have some kind of a title or position to be a leader. And so they say, well, I don't have a leadership position, so I'm not a leader. Well, you and I both know the position doesn't make you a leader anyway.
Right.
It gives you a chance to practice leadership, but it doesn't make you a leader. So what I tell people is this, leadership is influence. So how do I increase my influence?
Correct.
Because if I influence 10 and next month I influence 20, wow, I've doubled my leadership influence. So how do I do that? And it's a very simple answer. To increase your influence, you have to intentionally add value to people. This is where it all begins. So Ed, let's say that I want to have increased influence with you. Well, my first question isn't, boy, I hope that it'll follow me. The first question is how can I serve you?
Perfect.
What can I do to add value to you? So I'm going to ask you, how can I serve you? What can I do to help you? In fact, what's interesting, before we had this interview, I mean, it was cracking me up.
Right.
We were kind of trying to out-serve each other.
That's true.
Well, what can I do for you? What can I do for you?
That's right. I was just thinking of.
And it was a beautiful thing.
Right.
Because all we were really doing is I'm trying to help you.
Correct.
And here's what I know. If I sincerely add value to you, my influence will increase with you.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
So, we don't need to make leadership complicated. Just go out and intentionally add value to people, and your influence pool begins to expand. And after a while, I'm becoming quite a leader. So, leadership isn't title, position. It's all about adding value and serving to making a difference in other people's lives.
In order to do that, a lot of people are going to build an organization, build a team. They'll be in some sort of an environment like that. Nobody wins alone, it seems like, in life.
That's a fact.
I was listening to the story you were telling, and I'd like you to share it about, there's the analogy of getting people in the right seats on the bus, but you have this wonderful story about when you played basketball.
Yeah.
about at the end of practice, your coach would do something very
unique. Scrimmage. You'd have
this
scrimmage.
Is absolutely illustrates yeah. this point so beautiful. If you don't mind saying that.
No, it's a beautiful point. He would have the first team, the better players, five players, play the second team. And the only thing that he would do is he would put we who were on the first team out of position. And he always stuck me. I was a number two guard, but he always stuck me under the basket guarding a guy named Doug Roth that was 6'8". Okay, and he'd put maybe our center out there with the point guard. Mm-hmm. Well, he's put us out of position, and they said, "Now stay in your position and play to 20." Mm-hmm. Well, what would happen is the first team would always lose. And he'd sit us back down and say, "Now, did you lose because of talent? No. Did you lose? No, no. You lost for one reason. You were out of position." Mm-hmm. And remember this, whenever you're out of position, you're going to lose. Well, what they did is, I mean, I'm guarding a 6'8" guy. They just right. throw a high pass to him. He's just dropping that belt right. over me the whole time. Sure. Well, you can't. And so it was a great teaching for me yes. that no matter how gifted you are, no matter how committed you are, if you're out of position, yeah. you're not going to be successful. That's why everybody needs to find their sweet spot.
Yeah.
You know, what do I really do well?
Yes.
And on that, there's a point that I really want to make, and that is, I tell people, if you want to be highly successful, you've got to get into what I call the top 5%.
Okay.
So you got 100 people. You got 100 people here in whatever yeah. chosen profession you've got. You've got to be in the top five.
Yes.
You've got to get there. And you can only get to the top five if you're in your sweet spot. You can't get to the top five working on weaknesses. You can't get to the top five if I'm not in the area of my giftedness. So you've got to find out what you're good at, because that'll give you, if you're committed and if you got a good strategy and all this other, you got a good team around you, then that'll allow you to get in that top five. And once you're in that top 5%, you're in good shape. You're going to do very well. And I tell them, it doesn't matter what your profession is, you've got to get in the top 5%. And you can only get in the top 5% if you're in your position, if you're in your sweet spot, if you're in your gift.
Is there any technique, strategy, thought you have in order to identify what those sweet spots are for you?
Oh, yeah, trial and error. I mean, when I started, I started off as a pastor.
Yeah.
And so I had a counseling degree. So now I'm counseling people. Well, it takes me about 6 months to realize I'm not any good at that. I'm not. It's not my gift. They're coming in and I'm listening to them, and then I say, well, okay, it's obvious. Here's your issue. Here are three things. And I write on a piece of paper and hand it to them and say, now go be healed. Do you know what I mean? Go be healed. And the next month they'd come back in. I'd say, now, okay, what are we in here for? Well, I've got this problem. What's the problem? I heard last month. You know what I'm saying? Did you do the three things? No, I didn't do the three things. So you go back. Well, it wore me out. I wore them out. I wasn't any good. But that's what I was trained in.
Mm.
But it wasn't giving me the results. And one day, I mean, it really took me 3 years. One day I realized that when you counsel people, you work on their weaknesses. And when you equip people, you work on their strengths.
Oh, good.
Oh. And the moment I went from working on weaknesses to working on strengths, I was a rock star with strengths, because you show me your strength and I'm going to give you a game plan and let's get going, because I'm a natural equipper, not a natural counselor.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with counseling, it's just not my gift. You with me? And what did they teach me in college? They taught me how to administrate.
Yeah.
So I'm in my, I've got my little country church, I'm doing administration. Well, there's no return there. I mean, my gosh. And one day I'm waking up and I'm saying, wait a minute, this isn't working. I got to go get me some volunteers to do this administration so I can get back. And so it's trial and error. And sometimes I think we go to people like, Ed, if I'm trying to find out my strengths and you and I know each other really well, I may come to you and say, okay, well, talk to me, what do I do well?
Yes.
Sometimes we don't understand our own strengths, and it takes somebody that really is a good friend that knows us well that can say, well, I think you're really good in this area.
Yes.
But you got to find them.
Yes.
And the good news is everybody has gifts.
That's right.
Everybody. So there's not such thing as a person, I just have no gifts, and so I'm left out. Everybody has them. You just got to go find them.
Yep.
But once you find them, that's where you put all of your time in personal growth and development.
Mm.
Because the goal isn't just to learn a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I know a whole bunch of people, they're very knowledgeable, but they're not very successful.
That's right.
So what you got to do is you got to say, I'm going to stay in the area of my strengths.
Yes.
And so... At 27, when I decided I was going to speak and maybe write some books, I asked myself a very simple question. What are the areas that people need to excel in to be successful?
Mm.
And I came up with four areas.
Okay.
Relationships. I mean, if you can't get along with people, hello.
Yeah. Right.
Equipping. If you can't develop a team, you may have personal success, but you're not going to have you're not going to compound success because you don't have people helping you. An attitude of overcoming adversity and difficulty, the getting back up, not quitting, that whole process, and leadership, the ability to influence people.
Man.
And at 27, I said, those are the four things I'm going to spend my life. And if you'll look at my books, almost all of them are in relationships, equipping, attitude, and leadership.
It's true.
And I found the sweet spot for people to success.
Man.
And so I wrote all my books in those areas.
I'm going to tell you something. I've read of the majority of your books.
Thank you.
There was a window of time where I read every single one as they were coming out,
yes.
And now I'm back in that cycle again with you. And for me, the last couple minutes were really valuable because I'm obviously acknowledged like you are as a good leader. And,
sure.
But in my own mind, I've wondered whether I am sometimes because I'm not a great counselor either. and I mean that, like when people are looking for counsel from me, but what I am, I do feel like I'm really good at identifying giftedness in people.
Yes.
I see giftedness. I think I'm good at equipping people. And so leaders come in different shapes, sizes, and forms. That was just really a good validation just for me, and I think it would be for certain people listening to this, because I think also sometimes people that are really good at executing themselves potentially maybe struggle with counseling people on how to do things, but they're great at they could be great at equipping
people. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And what I found is successful people are really good at finding their gifts, getting in their gift zone, and then just really staying there and becoming successful.
Yeah, I think they're happier too.
Oh yes, but successful leaders, there's the difference. Successful leaders have the ability of what you just described, Ed, of finding the strength, sweet spot for other people and getting them in that sweet spot.
Yeah.
And that's where the return is.
That's right.
I've spent my life, after I discovered what my strengths were, now I'm just helping other people find their strengths because there's nothing more empowering to a person than to find out that they are good at something and then being equipped and taught how to do it well.
That's honestly what you just described is what I enjoy doing most of my life.
That's why you're a leader.
Well, I hope I'm working on it. Thank you. I just want you to know something. Like the whole interview, everything we're doing today, that was valuable for me because I've struggled even myself. Like, why am I? That's an element of my ability with people that's just limited. I'm not great at counseling people, but I am good at equipping them. So it's just a distinction that I really appreciate. Yeah. One other thing about teams, and then I want to talk about the new book. But one thing I want to talk about on building teams and having teams is, I have probably talked about the law of the catalyst.
Oh yeah.
In my life in business that you've talked about in various different books.
Yes.
Both identifying them in organizations so that they can grow, and also wanting to be identified as one, as someone coming through an organization.
Yes.
Could you just talk
about,
most people listening to this are familiar with your work, but obviously there are people that aren't as well.
Of course.
So what is that law of the, what is a catalyst in an organization? Why is it important? Why do you want to be one?
Well, Ed, that's out of my book, The 17 Laws of Teamwork. Yeah. And basically that chapter is about the fact that good leaders have the ability to make things happen. And so when people look at me and they say, okay, John, I'm looking for maybe a potential leader. What's the first thing I look for? The first thing I say for them to look for is look for somebody that makes things happen.
Yes.
Because you end up with a whole bunch of people, they're wondering what happened. You know what I'm saying? And they're not the one you want to recruit.
Right.
So I say, go find, because here's what I discovered. If you can make things happen for yourself, you now have the credibility to make things happen for other people.
Whoa.
If I'm not successful, there is no appeal for you to follow me. I tell people all the time, success is the credibility of a leader to lead. Because you think about it, nobody ever said, oh my gosh, I'm financially in deep weeds. Oh my gosh, I think I'm gonna go call my buddy Joe. He's been bankrupt 3 times.
Hey, Joe.
No, you don't follow Joe. Joe's been bankrupt 3 times. You got to go find somebody that's successful with money.
So true.
Going to get a divorce. Oh my gosh, I'm going to call Jack. He's been divorced 4 times.
Right.
Jack, help me with my marriage. You see, people, when they need help, the first thing they think about is who is better than me that I can follow. And so the credibility of a leader as far as to lead is that they're successful. I mean, I'm successful, I say, hey, I'd want to join my team. Well, of course. I mean, if LeBron James was in the room right now, LeBron says, we're going to play a little basketball.
Right.
And LeBron says, I'll pick and then John will pick. Well, when LeBron's there, you've got your hand up and say, LeBron, pick me, because you're going to win if you get LeBron.
Right.
And every time I'm getting ready to pick, you're diving behind the chair. You don't want to be on my team. Yep. You're going to lose on my team. Yep. And so what I tell people all the time is that the first thing you've got to do is you've got to get good yourself. why would I ever think that I should lead somebody if I'm not any good at it?
So true.
Okay, but once I'm good and I've found my success, now I begin to say, okay, how do I compound this? Well, I compound this by looking at Ed and saying, okay, Ed, let me help you find your sweet spot, and let's get you on this same road, because now all of a sudden, this is how I really build a team. And so the law of the catalyst is all about making things happen. Yeah. And that's what I look for. I mean, Jack Welch, his phrase was, that, you know, who's going to get out of the pile?
Yeah.
You know, he'd say when he's at General Electric, you know, there's a big pile of people in this company. Mm-hmm. Well, who's going to get out of the pile? Well,
yes.
Well, somebody's going to climb out. Mark Cole is the CEO. I have six companies, and Mark Cole's the CEO of them. And the reason that he is because he got out of the pile.
Yes.
He got out of the pile. He started in the stock room.
Yes.
And
did he really?
Yeah,
Mark did?
Yeah, absolutely.
Did he really? Wow.
And I just took him out last week. No. but
that's awesome.
Mark's here, by the
Mark's
way, and he's
here,
cracking
everybody.
Up over
Mark's
this.
Here with us.
But he got out of the pile.
Yes.
In other words, everywhere he was, he succeeded.
Yes.
And everywhere he went, he won.
Yes.
And after a while, you just sit there and say, okay, I think I'll let him run this thing because he knows how to do it. And so for all of us, I say, before you go lead somebody else, just kind of get good yourself.
So right. You're a mutual hero of mine, friend of yours that we were talking about off camera, Art Williams.
Oh,
how important is leadership, right? And Art would used to say, and still probably does, say, you want to show me any church, Boy Scout troop, football team, company, I'm going to show you something being run by a leader.
That's right.
And in every great company, the leaders are great at identifying catalysts. I mean, and when you find them, pay them well, keep them, because they're priceless when you have them. Somebody, I'm sure Mark's over there nodding his head that you should even pay him even better. So,
yeah.
So, but I wanted to say something to you about your books that I think are just, they're such great reads. They're easy to read. They're memorable. He makes points and then backs them up with incredible stories and anecdotes and quotes. And so it's the other thing about your books. They're incredibly, I would say, the information is profound, unique, and deep, yet very easy to, you equip people so well with the way you write it, that it's transferable.
That's right.
The information is so transferable. You do that better than anybody of anybody's work that I read. I enjoy reading every single book. The problem with your books oftentimes is when you highlight them, you would almost be better off in John's books highlighting the parts that you don't want to go back and remember, because it's literally just covered in highlighter when you highlight his books. I'm serious.
Thank you, buddy.
It's an absolute fact. I always get tired of highlighting. It's like every single part of every single page, it would seem to me.
Well, I'm a communicator, so let's start here. You know, an educator takes something simple and makes it complicated. I mean, think of all my college, all this stuff. I mean, in an educational world, if you're not confused, they're not happy.
So true.
I mean, their sentences are a paragraph long. I mean, by the time I get down to the paragraph, I forgot what the first part of the sentence was. I got to go back and read the paragraph. Instead of short sentences, you know, I'm dealing with a paragraph. But a communicator is exactly opposite. They take something complicated and make it simple. And so here's, when I write a book or when I speak, doesn't matter, my first objective is to keep it so simple that when I say it, it immediately resonates with people.
Wow. And
in fact, anytime you have to explain what you said, you didn't say it right the first time. So my joke is, I put the cookies on the lower shelf so everybody can have some. And so, simple as far as understanding, but deep. Because there's a difference.
Sure.
But deep when it comes to profound results that it'll make in your life.
It's an absolute fact. What you're saying.
I mean, one of the principles I teach is very simple. I just hold my arm up in the air and I say, everything worthwhile is uphill. There's nothing in your life worthwhile that's not uphill. It's all uphill. Well, everybody gets it. I mean, it's all uphill.
That's so good.
You know, and here's the problem. We get uphill hot hopes, but we have downhill habits. Okay, we're in trouble. You know, got a downhill habit, you're not going uphill.
So
got to change that habit. So everything that I teach with a real passion to keep it simple, but keep it very practical, and make sure that the principle is life-changing.
Yes.
If you could do those three things, then you really got it going. And when I wrote the book, Leader Shifts, I've been sitting on that book probably for a good 12 years.
Have you really?
In fact, a lady on our team named Erin, who does a lot of content for me,
yes,
she shared with me, she said, John, you really need to get that book out. And I kind of put it on the shelf and really wasn't too excited about getting it out because I thought, I don't know, this may be a little too simple. But when I started writing, I thought, this is going to be life-changing. And, and now that I'm looking at the book coming out, I'm so excited because here's what happens. We start leading in a way that gives us some success. And immediately we get into this pattern. And what we don't understand is that leadership, if leadership is about anything, it's about adjusting and being flexible. And if you want to be a manager, then nail it, get it straight, do it the same way every time. That's management. But when it comes to leadership, in fact, if you go back into the 1980s, there were no leadership books in bookstores. Right. They were all management books.
Right.
Because you're trying to manage your company, your business. And then things began to change so fast, people were saying, this management stuff doesn't work because this baby isn't staying the same. I turned around and it moved on me. And so I've got to get in front of it. And so leadership is all about being in front. Well, if you're in front, one of the first things you know is if you're in front, you don't know everything.
Yes.
So the issue is not knowing everything. The issue is when you know something, adjusting as quickly as you possibly can. Because if we don't adjust quickly, we miss it.
Yes.
Because it's a timing thing.
Especially today.
I was getting ready to speak for a company recently, and their theme was fast forward, and we were doing a pre-call, and they asked me, they said, what's fast forward mean to you? I said, well, fast means faster. As you look in the future, if anybody thinks that the future is going to be a little bit slower, or I love these people say, well, I'm just waiting for things to slow down. You know what? I would suggest dying. That's probably about the only way it's going to slow down for you. So fast is faster. But let me tell you something. Forward is shorter. When I started off as a leader, we had 10-year long-range plans. And 5-year was a mid-range. A short-range plan when I started off, now I'm talking about in the dark ages now, was a 2-year plan.
Yeah.
Well, a 2-year plan now, that's a ridiculous long range. I mean, that kind of makes you suck air. You say, I think that's a little bit long.
Yes.
So what I know is fast is faster and forward shorter.
Ooh, very good.
So let me tell you something. The only people that are going to win are people that can make leader shifts and adjust quickly. And so I wrote the book. I talk about 11 leader shifts that I've made in my lifetime.
Yes.
And people ask me all the time, they say, John, how have you stayed? I'm 71. How have you stayed on top of your game? And I say, it's very simple. It's not the same game.
Gosh.
Okay, baseball is called baseball. But it's not the same game.
So true.
I mean, you don't go to the baseball game the second day and say, oh my gosh, now wait a minute. That leadoff hitter got a single yesterday. Oh, he struck out. Oh my Lord. You see, it maybe had the same title.
Yeah.
But it isn't the same game.
Yes.
And you don't lead today's game on yesterday's results.
No kidding.
Babe Ruth said one day, he said, yesterday's home run won't win today's game.
That's right.
And I'll tell you what, yesterday's thinking won't win today's game either. Mm. So I talked about leader shifts that you need to make in your life to keep you on the edge and to keep you adjustable and flexible so that you can really lead your people well. Because here's what I know. People don't like change.
You're right.
So when the leader is resistant to change, he's going to get into this leadership gravity pool, or she is, that's going to go down every time. Because I can tell you, you're not going to have the people behind you saying, come on, let's make some more changes. Let's make some more adjustments. No. They're wanting to hold on to what they have. And your job as a leader is to say there's something better. If you just let this go, there's something better for you here tomorrow. And that's and that's what the good leaders do.
I think the timing for this book, based on what you described, is so requisite. I was involved in, obviously like you are, multiple different companies. I was in a meeting last week, and one of the folks in that company that was leading it, whom I like a great deal, but 5 different times in the meeting, that person said in the meeting, well, the way we've always done it is. And I thought, this is the beginning of the death of that organization. The way we've always done it is. The way we've always done it is isn't necessarily what we should be doing now. It's interesting. You take a look at a guy like Belichick. Coach Belichick in the NFL, right?
Great example.
Great guy. And people say, well, why have the coaches that have left him maybe not had the success that he's had? And I think one of the reasons that happens, I work with a lot of the guys in that league, I think oftentimes when a coach leaves someone like that, they're constantly saying, well, what Coach Belichick always did is. Meanwhile, Coach Belichick's evolving all the time, and you've got this snapshot of the year or two you were with him. And so I think that's absolutely true in almost every business, that leaders take snapshots of both their own company or maybe even the person they worked with in the past that was a great leader.
Yeah, Malcolm Gladwell makes a great statement on that, and he basically, his statement is that if you are comfortable today with what you were comfortable with yesterday, you're already in trouble.
Man, that sounds
and I believe that to be.
Do you think that's part of you, John? I mean, I was thinking about you driving over here. We have several mutual friends, and I mean, right when I met you, you were the most energized, intense, confident, kind person that I recall ever meeting, right? I'm sure I've met. I mean, you are 71 years old, yet it seems like you're on your A game
now. A-plus game. Thank you.
And I know even how difficult it was even for us just to get a conversation today. And so you embody these things. One of the things about that I think makes a leader great, too, is they're congruent. So meaning the things you're writing about are the things you're doing.
Oh,
and
that's
so,
beautiful.
And you're incredible. So I want to make sure everyone has a chance to get this book. So the book's out in a couple weeks, everybody. It comes out February 5th, but they can pre-order it right now on
Amazon.com.
On Amazon.com.
Absolutely.
And so you're going to want to make sure that you do that, everybody, now. You want to be the first people to get this book. I obviously cannot wait for this book. I want the different organizations I'm involved with to read this as well. I'm telling you, listen, everyone. Not that John needs this. My full, complete, entire endorsement of the things this man teaches and writes, you have from me. And so please go get this. It's going to serve you. And when we say leader, by the way, a lot of you ladies that are listening to this that are entrepreneurs, you know, your number one leadership job is dad or mom. And so when we're talking about the law of the catalyst, ask yourself, who's the catalyst in your family? Who's the one changing your family tree? Who's the one leading your family? Who's the one setting the culture in your family? As a parent, how great are you at identifying giftedness in your children and bringing that out of them? All of these principles apply not just in the business space or just in the faith space. Can we talk about a couple chapters in the book, though? Do you mind just covering a couple
You're
things?
You're the boss.
Well, we're limited on time, but I want to max you out here a little bit. So, because I watched this. One of the chapters in the book, and we're not going to give the entire book away, just a couple thoughts on a couple of the chapters.
Sure.
Pleasing people to challenging people, the relational shift. So many leaders are afraid to or unwilling to challenge people, I think, oftentimes. Perhaps that's because they haven't built the relationship with them that they need to. I'm not sure why that is, but can you just speak to, what do you mean by pleasing people to challenge people?
Well, that was, Ed, that was one of my most difficult shifts. Because I grew up in a very wonderful home, relationally strong. And so I kind of had this idealistic idea about people that they all got along. And so when I started pastoring,
it
didn't take long. It's kind of like, whoa, they're not getting along. And and they're supposed to be people of faith. And and so here I am in an environment which basically grew up with very little contention and strife. And so I'm having it. And so my first thought is, well, I'm not leading well. My gosh, if I was leading better, they would all be happy. And so my goal for the first, really for about the first 3 years, was to make everybody happy. So I'd go around, and if you weren't happy, I'd run over and say, okay, what do I need to make you happy? And of course, you've got a long list. So I'm over there, I'm trying to fulfill that list. I'm going over there, and what do you have to make you happy? And you know, after a period of time, I began to realize this is not leadership. You know, my goal isn't to make people happy. I'm not a clown. I'm a leader. My goal is to help people. And all of a sudden, I realized when you help people, they're not always happy. And so my responsibility is to help you, not satisfy you. When I was writing the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership, I was signing books and the 21 Laws, and a guy brought the book up to be signed, so I'm signing. And he said, I disagree with one of your laws. And I said, oh, that's okay. And I signed it and handed it back to him, and he just stood there. Looked at him and said, I don't think you hear me. He said, I disagree with one of your laws. And I said, okay, well, that's okay. And then I realized that it wasn't okay with him, that it was okay with me,
you, right?
That he disagreed with one of his laws. And that's what I looked at and said, I didn't write the book to make you happy. I wrote the book to help you. It's like a person says, I disagree with the law of gravity. Well, it's okay. Go to a four-story building, jump off, you'll buy into the law.
Right?
I mean, the laws don't ask you if you like them. The laws say these are the laws. You got to learn them. And so it was a tough adjustment for me to go from trying to make everybody happy to understanding that there's some loneliness in leadership in their times. You make decisions that people are not going to be pleased with, but that's leadership, and that's what we're supposed to
I can't wait for people to read that chapter, because I do think that that is
a huge stumbling block for people.
So,
yeah.
Well, again, everybody, this is Leader Shifts. It's out February 5th. You need to get your hands on this, and I don't want to make sure that we give away the book. So I just want to ask you one more question about one thing in the book, just because I need to know at least 5% of the chapter from you, okay? I want to know what you meant by train leaders to transformational leaders. Just what that means, and then they can obviously read the book to get all the details. But what's a train leader compared to a transformational leader?
Well, that now you're in the core of my calling, because I have an organization, a nonprofit organization called Equip. And so it's designed to train leaders. And so we, especially in the faith community, made a commitment to, we start off with a what we call a million leader mandate. Let's see if we can train a million leaders in the world. We accomplished that. And again, as the vision, as you go, the vision expands. And I said, now that we trained a million leaders, I wonder if we could train a leader in every country of the world.
Man.
And so we focused on, and in 19 years from starting this organization, in the 19th year, we had trained 5 million leaders in every country of the world. We are the largest leadership training organization in the world.
Wow.
And it was so fulfilling and so satisfying. I mean, and so the board, we got together. I mean, we're having celebrations and parties, and we hit this. And so we're in a board meeting, and it was kind of like, wow, look what we did, look what we did. And all of a sudden, there was a restlessness within me. And I said, you know what? I think there's a level higher than what we've done. And they're all looking at us, what do you mean? We trained all these leaders. And we went into, I bet, about a three-hour discussion that day with my board, because a lot of them said, boy, let's end it. We just scored. We just won the Super Bowl. And here you're kind of wanting to dive back in. And what I told them was, I said, well, the good news is we've trained leaders. So leaders know what to do. But just because you know how to lead doesn't mean you're changing lives. And I said, I think there's a higher level of leadership than trained leaders. And that's transformed leaders. And so we've got to figure this out. And honestly, even my key people, they looked at me and said, boy, I don't think we understand this transformation. What's transformation? And what I told them was, I can't explain it, but when you see it, you'll know it.
Oh, my goodness.
And so we started going in and developing the identity, the characteristics of a transformational leader. And then we started understanding that if people are going to be transformed, it's got to be in small groups like round tables, not in massive audiences. And we'd trained in auditoriums and massive audiences, and people are taking good notes, and they're learning it. But transformation happens when you and I are talking, and you're encouraging me and challenging me, and I'm asking questions, and we're having that give and take. So we said, let's go see if we can transform countries. And we started with Guatemala. And there's just three things to think about. We start top down. We don't even go into country unless the president asks us. Mm-hmm. So we come in by the invitation of the president. We have 22 presidents of countries who have now asked us to come in and do transformation. So, I mean, the line's getting long because things are. So top down, because influence filters down. It doesn't filter up. So I mean, we go, you know, top government, top business, top education, top religion, top media, top arts. We go and we get permission. So it's top down, but then transformation also, it goes small round table to big. Mass movements don't begin with a mass. Mm-hmm. They begin with a few people. Mm-hmm. So it goes, you know, round table, small, big. And then we teach values. Mm-hmm. Because what changes people's lives are values. Which is inside out. It's inside out, small, big, top down. And we've got this strategy, Ed. And we've trained 500,000 people in Guatemala now.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're going for the tipping point. 10% of a nation, we're wanting to be in round tables because, that's the tipping point.
Sure.
Malcolm Gladwell talks about. And we're in Paraguay now, and we are in Costa Rica. And, I just came back from Kenya. I went to Saudi Arabia this year.
And
by the invitations of the leaders, of the country.
Congratulations.
And so it's so exciting. And so in leadership, I talk about transformation. And it's just one chapter, but it was a shift I made, and it was a great shift. But probably every book I write from now on, I'll have something transformation, because we're seeing such life change, and I'm living and watching this, that it's kind of like it's contagious, and I'm wanting to share it with others, because I think that once a leader understands transformation, they go to a whole new level of their leadership. And now people aren't just following you because you're going to help them be successful. They're following you because their life is being changed.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's a whole different game.
You everybody, I know you're hearing this, and we've taken so much of your time, but this man's, you're just a treasure. I mean, there's one of him, everybody. There's nobody like this. There's no one that has this depth of understanding, this depth of faith, this depth of character. The ability to communicate is, when we were driving over, I told my wife, I said, just the minute he opens his mouth, it's just beautiful. When you hear the deep voice and his cadence, and I just feel like I love being in your presence because I feel like I'm with somebody who's chasing the calling of their life, that's fulfilling their purpose. Yeah. And I just think you're a treasure. And I want people to get leaderships, obviously, in Amazon February 5th, but I also want them experiencing you beyond that. And so other places they can find you are social media. You've got a couple million people. Is it John Maxwell on all of the social media platforms? We'll put it up on the screen here.
It's johnmaxwell.com. They can go to that. And you know, I have a coaching company. Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
We started a coaching company 7 years ago. We've got over 20,000 coaches in 152 countries now.
And they can find that through johnmaxwell.com?
Or johnmaxwellteam.com, yeah.
Okay, John Maxwell Team, and also Instagram, Twitter, all of the platforms. Follow John, guys. You want to be getting, wouldn't you love to be hearing this sort of stuff on a very regular basis? And so not only should you be involved with his books, but you should be listening. A couple more questions before we go. Personal ones, though, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
One of the things I've admired about you all of my life, obviously, is that I'm proud when a man of faith is willing to be bold about it, but also just watching successful men of faith. But I'm going to ask you, if you don't mind answering.
No.
I'm curious personally, and there are people listening to this that are at this place in their life too. Have you ever struggled with your faith? Have you ever doubted your faith?
You know, I've struggled with my relationship with God. Hmm. I've never struggled with my faith.
Okay.
And that's not because I'm a highly wonderful spiritual person. I am an automatic faith trusting person.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of cynicism, skepticism in my life that kind of makes me kind of look. In fact, probably my strength is my weakness. I'm very trusting with people, and so the good news is everybody feels very embraced. And the bad news is that I can certainly and have had times when that wasn't the best thing. So with my faith, as far as my faith in God, that's never, but my relationship I have. And it's always over, centers always around one thing. See, I believe that the key to success for a person of faith is obedience. Hmm. So if somebody said, John, how can I have a successful walk with God? I would just say, obedience. Hmm. Because that's how we get into the rhythm of a relationship, is obedience. And there have been times I've been disobedient.
Okay.
And what I tell people is when you're in the rhythm of a relationship with God in obedience, it's very natural. I don't get up and say, oh, I'm really obedient today. And oh my gosh, you know, woo.
Yeah.
I'm just in that rhythm.
Sure.
But what I tell people all the time is if you're in a rhythm of obedience and then you do something wrong, It just stands up. It waves a flag. It's like you may not know you're always obedient, but you will know when you're disobedient.
Hmm.
And there have been times when I put myself over God and put my own desires over God or my own will or my own way over God. Hmm. And you know, I feel kind of comfortable with that because David did that. You know, and what did God say about David? He's a man after my own heart.
Yes.
And why did he say that? He said that not because David was a perfect man,
right,
but it was because every time God began to deal with him, David's great desire was to get back over to that rhythm of obedience again with God. I mean, he didn't resist him. He strayed, but he came back and said, oh my gosh, I got to get back over in that rhythm. And I think what God looks for in us is not perfection, but I think he does look for us to have a heart to serve him and to love
him too.
And to seek him. Does that make sense?
It does. That's a wonderful answer. And I appreciate you being willing to answer it too, because I think sometimes people observe somebody like you, maybe me once in a while, and they think that we never have any struggle like that or that we live perfectly all the time. And I think that vulnerability helps so many people.
I get very uncomfortable with the leadership pedestal.
Yeah.
Very, very uncomfortable because people want to put me there all the time because, you know, they look up and they kind of admire what you've done. And I had a great mentor a great mentor that helped me many, many years ago that really centered me. And here's what he said. His name was Fred Smith. And he said, John, in fact, I will never forget.
Fred Smith?
No, not the Express guy. Okay. Another Fred Smith out of Dallas, who is also a very successful corporate CEO. Okay. But he had been to, you know, I'm just a kid. And I've got the 10th largest church in America, and I'm, what, 31 or 32. Mm-hmm. And he took me out to a long lunch on Sunday after church. And he said, John, great service, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. And he said, I really need to teach you something about giftedness. And it, what he told me, Ed, was he said, your gifts are greater than you. Mm-hmm. And he said, you have these amazing gifts, and so people, they're attracted to what you do, and they'll say, John, you're amazing. He said, when people tell you're amazing, always understand that they're confused. You're not amazing at all. He says, you're human, you're a sinner, mm-hmm. you're prone to mess up and make screw-ups of your, he said, there's nothing amazing about you, John. Mm-hmm. He said, what they really are seeing is your giftedness.
Yes.
And so he said, John, when people want to tell you how wonderful you are, he said, you're not wonderful. You're just a human sinner like everyone else. There's nothing that sets you apart from anyone else except your giftedness. So he said, when they're on their feet and giving you a standing ovation, smile, wave to them, but understand, they're applauding your gifts. They're not applauding. And I'm telling you, Ed, that day I walked out of the Brigantine restaurant in San Diego, California, and I said, I got that.
Yeah.
I got that. And so what does that do? So when all this good stuff happens to me, it goes right back to God because I didn't give myself the gift. He gave it to me. He is the total source of everything that's good about me, and I'm the total source of everything that's screwed up about me.
That's so beautiful.
And I don't get those two confused at all. Wonderful. You follow what I'm saying? Wonderful. So when I'm in a mess up, I just look at myself because I've got the blame. But when the good stuff happens to me, it's Him. And that centered me.
Yes.
And I can tell you today that I'm very appreciative when people, you know, John, you're, but when they say all those things, I'm walking off the stage, I'm saying to God, the only reason they're standing is because you gave me these gifts. And by the way, He can take them from me anytime He wants to. And so therefore, I want to make sure that I always am grateful for that gift because, again, a gift can be given, but a gift can be taken away.
That's so beautiful. One more question.
Yes, sir.
Last one. Can I just tell you something, though?
Yeah.
It's so good to have a hero of mine and somebody that's been a role model of mine exceed my expectations as a man. And so in this short time we've had, it just feels really good for me. Yeah. You know, I hope that someday people feel that way, the way I feel about you.
Well, because I've watched,
we've spoken on the same, obviously, agendas a couple different times.
Sure.
And I've read your stuff, but I've looked up to you and you exceed my expectations. So
this is the beginning of a long, beautiful relationship. Ed.
I feel that way.
This is kind of like the catalyst for us to now
wonderful.
Spend some time together.
Very grateful.
I greatly admire you.
Thank you.
And
I'm
grateful, very grateful for you letting me be with you today.
Oh, our audience is most grateful, and so am I. So thank you. Last question. I want to ask it on behalf because we both started out. Let's help people today, and obviously you've done that in many, many folds over. But there's people watching this. They say, "Look, I'd like to start to transform my life."
Yeah.
You know, there's transformational leaders, but I need to transform my life. I want to take a step towards being happier, being more successful. And they had a minute with John Maxwell. They ran into you in a coffee shop. They said, "Mr. Maxwell, I've got a question for you. What would your advice be to me about just transforming my life? What would be the step you would take, the thought I should have, the action maybe I should take?" Your answer to them would be
And in fact, I'm going to talk to them right now. Being a person of faith, the first thing I would share with you is a relationship with God, okay? And if you don't have a relationship with God, you're my friend, love you as much as someone that does, so please understand that. I'm not trying to convert you. It's just that when you find something that really is beautiful, you want to share it with everybody. I remember when I became a person of faith, the verse that grabbed me the most is the verse that says, if a person is in Christ, he becomes a new creation. Mm-hmm. And I did. I became a new person again because of Him. Now, let's skip that, okay? If you're not a person of faith, just act like you never heard it, okay? Let's go to the real thing. I would sit down at the table with you and I'd say, if you really want to be transformed, you have to live an intentional life. Mm-hmm. This is so simple, I don't want you to miss it. Most people don't lead their life, they accept their life. And when you accept your life, you are living on things that are not worthy of your time and effort and energy. And you heard me say in a moment, everything worthwhile is uphill. The reason I want you to understand that is to go uphill, you have to be intentional. Nobody ever went uphill by accident. You've never read a book on accidental achievements. You have to be intentional with what you do and who you are. And so I would just say to you, find your strengths, become very intentional, and commit your life every day to it's all uphill. It's all uphill. And listen, Ed's very successful. He's got great businesses, he's made a lot of money. Can I tell you something? It's still uphill for him. See, the great mistake we make is we think, I'm going to go out and make enough money, and there's a day when I can relax and I can rest, and everything's going to be easy. Can I tell you something? The day that you have that day, you know, one of your children, you know, gets in an accident, problems will never, ever leave you. Issues, obstacles, difficulties, they're always going to surround you. So you never get to that place where you've got it made. You're not supposed to got it made. You're supposed to add value to people, and it's all uphill.
Oh, my gosh.
So the moment I understand that, then what happens is I commit myself to it, and then it becomes a beautiful uphill climbing life. Because one thing that's beautiful about going uphill is the scenery is really good. So you got to be intentional with it. So that's what I would say to them. Be intentional. Start today. And here's the difference. Good intentions are overrated. Gosh. I know so many people, I'm going to do that. Yes, I think that's a good idea. I think I'm going to do that. Good intentions are it's the most overrated phrase in the world. You've got to go from good intentions to good actions. Nothing happens until you've got good actions, and you won't have good actions until you're intentional with your life. Okay. My name's John, and I'm your friend. And I'm yours.
I'm so grateful you're my friend. Yeah. And now you've made millions more friends that are so grateful for that connection with you. So
thank you
so much, brother. I mean, honestly.
It's my pleasure.
It's my pleasure. Yeah. And everybody, I know that you're grateful too. Please do a few things I'm going to ask you. Number one, I'd like you to go get John's book because it's going to help you. He doesn't need to sell another book out of the 30 million he sold. He wants to serve you and help you. So please go get Leaderships. Also, follow John on social media. You already follow me or you wouldn't be watching this, but I want to ask you to please refer the podcast to different people. Subscribe, leave a review, help it move up the rankings. And just remember, every day on Instagram, I run the max out 2-minute drill. And what that means is when I make a post on my main feed, everybody makes a comment within the first 2 minutes. You go into a daily drawing. We pick a winner every day. Some of them win my book. They could win John's book, coaching calls with me, max out gear, you name it. It's just to keep you engaged in the max out universe and in the community. So make sure you're making comments on my posts and staying engaged and connected with me. John, thank you so much for today.
It's been my pleasure.
Exceeded my expectations. God bless you, everybody, and max out.
This is the Ed Milet Show. We'll be right back.